ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। रीडिङ्ग् फ्रम् श्रीमद्भागवतम् केण्टो 11 चाप्टर् 1 एण्टैटल्ड् द कर्स् अपान् द यदु डैनस्टि टेक्स्ट् नम्बर् 11 अण्ड् 12। कर्माणि पुण्यनिवहाणि सुमङ्गलानि गायत् जगत्कलिमलापहराणि कृत्वा। कालात्मना निवसता यदुदेवगेहे पिण्डारकं समगमन्मुनयो निसृष्टा। कर्माणि पुण्यनिवहाणि सुमङ्गलानि गायत् जगत्कलिमलापहराणि कृत्वा। कालात्मना निवसता यदुदेवगेहे पिण्डारकं समगमन्मुनयो निसृष्टा। कर्माणि पुण्यनिवहाणि सुमङ्गलानि गायत् जगत् कलिमलापहराणि कृत्वा। कालात्मना निवसता यदुदेवगेहे पिण्डारकं समगमन्मुनयो निसृष्टा। कर्माणि पुण्यनिवहाणि सुमङ्गलानि गायत् जगत्कलिमलापहराणि कृत्वा। यदुदेवगेहे कर्माणि पुण्यनिवहाणि सुमङ्गलानि Artha Jis.
Karmani punyani vahani sumangalani.
Karmani punyani vahani sumangalani. Word to word translation. Karmani, fruitive results. Punya, piety. Nivahani, which bestow. Sumangalani, most auspicious. Gayat, chanting about which. Jagat, for the whole world. Kali, of the current degraded age. Mala, the impurities. Apaharani, which take away. Kritva, having performed. Kalatmana, by him who is the very personification of time. Nivasata, residing, Yadu Deva, of the Lord of the Yadus. Gehe, in the home. Pindarakam, in the pilgrimage site known as Pindaraka. Samagamam, they went. Munayaha, the sages. Nisrishta, being let out. Vishwamitra Asita Kanva. Okay, this is the next verse. I'll just read the translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Vishwamitro Sita Kanvo Durvaso Bhrugurangira Kashyapo Vamadevotrir Vasishto Naradadaya. Translation. The sages Vishwamitra, Asita, Kanva, Durvasa, Bhrugu, Angira, Kashyapa, Vamadeva, Atri and Vasishta, along with Narada and others, once performed fruitive rituals that award abundant pious results, bring great happiness and take away the sins of Kali Yuga for the whole world by merely being recounted. The sages duly executed these rituals in the home of the chief of the Yadus, Vasudev, the father of Lord Krishna. After Lord Krishna, who was staying in Vasudev's house as time personified, respectfully sent the sages off at the conclusion of the ceremonies. They went to the holy place called Pindaraka. Purport. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami begins to narrate the story of the Brahminical curse that arose against the Yadu dynasty by the Lord's desire. According to Sridhar Swami, certain religious rituals such as the Ashwamedha Yajna generate pious reactions. On the other hand, activities such as caring for one's children give immediate pleasure in the present only, whereas rituals performed as atonement take away sinful reactions. But the religious activities mentioned in verse 11, which are indicated by the words karmani punya nivahani sumangalani gayat jagat kalimalapaharani, were pious in all respects. They produced abundant pious results and great joy and were so potent that merely glorifying these rituals relieves one from all the sinful reactions of Kali Yuga. The sages called to Vasudev's house to perform such auspicious religious activities were satisfied with proper gifts and then sent by Krishna to Pindaraka, a nearby holy place situated about 2 miles from the Arabian Sea on the coast of Gujarat. Its current name is still Pindaraka. Significantly, Lord Krishna is mentioned here as Kalatmana, the form of the time or the super soul. In the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead reveals himself to Arjun as time personified, appearing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to destroy all the kings and armies who constitute a burden to the earth. Similarly, Kalatmana Nivasata Yadu Deva Gehe, Krishna was staying in the home of his father Vasudev as time personified, thus indicating that the time was approaching for the destruction of his own dynasty according to his desire.
Oma Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namavo Mishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashati Dashatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Kaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Keep this down.
So we are today reading from the 11th canto, first chapter, the curse upon the Yadu dynasty. So Parishit Maharaj had asked a question to Shukadeva Goswami that how could the members of the Yadu dynasty, who are so respectful to the Brahminical culture, how could they actually disrespect the sages? And how could actually the sages curse the Yadu dynasty, who are actually so dear to Krishna, who are all actually having a one-pointed devotion to Krishna? And even if they did curse, how could that curse act upon the Yadu dynasty, who are personally protected by Krishna? So in this way, Parishit Maharaj asked this question. And in response, Shukadeva Goswami starts narrating the story of the curse upon the Yadu dynasty. So in this particular verse, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining that Vasudev performed certain religious rituals, and for that he had invited many of the sages, Vishwamitra, Asita, Kanva, Durvasa, and many other sages, Bhrigu, Angira, etc. And after performing these rituals, Krishna along with, they sent the sages off to the conclusion of the ceremonies, and then they went to the holy place called as Pindaraka. So it is described that the rituals which were performed by Vasudev, they were not actually ordinary rituals. These rituals, they would give actually immense pious credits. In fact, these rituals were so glorious that merely glorifying these religious activities would give actually so much of pious credits. So that is one point which Sridhar Swami points out in the purport. And then it's explained in this particular verse, there is one significance word which says that Kalatmana Nivasata Yadu Deva Gehe. So it is said, the sages duly executed these rituals in the home of the chief of the Yadus, that is Vasudev. And after Krishna, who was staying at Vasudev's house as time personified, respectfully sent off these sages, they went to the holy place called as Pindaraka. So in this verse it's explained that the particular phrase which is used to describe Krishna is Kalatmana. It's like Krishna as time personified, who was staying at the house of Vasudev. So when they actually sent off the sages, then all the Yadus went to the place called as Pindaraka. So therefore the Acharyas also comment on this word Kalatmana. So which indicates that Krishna is going to perform this pastime of the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty, the Maushal Leela, in his feature as time personified. So Prabhupada quotes actually the 11th chapter Bhagavad Gita verse where Krishna says that I am actually time personified, that as time personified I am going to cause the destruction of the entire armies who are present in this battlefield of Kurukshetra. So time personified, time actually, it makes a person completely humble, even in a spiritual life. If we see that over a period of time, like when a person came to Krishna consciousness, when he came, initially we are excited about a particular aspect of Krishna consciousness. We may be excited about the yatra, or by kirtan, or by the particular devotees, or certain activities. But over a period of time, many of these external things may change. Like for example, initially with the yatras could be very small, but now the yatras were long. Like many people come, so one may see that we don't have the same intimate mood as the previous yatras. That way many externals change, but to the extent a person is focused on the essence of Krishna consciousness, although over a period of time many things change, but still one can continue to practice Krishna consciousness without getting disturbed by the changes which take place because of the time factor. So time factor completely makes a person humble. So many things actually change. So today especially, so this is something about the verse I wanted to discuss. So today especially being Shivaratri, so I want to discuss something about the glories of Lord Shiva from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva has been described in many places in the Bhagavatam, right from the first canto till the 12th canto. So whatever time I had, I prepared a few points on Lord Shiva. We'll try to share that. Like for example, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, after the disappearance of Krishna, Arjuna is recollecting various incidents, various pastimes of the Pandavas with Krishna. And Arjuna is mentioning that because of Krishna's grace, we were able to actually overcome these difficulties. And then he gives a series of incidents. Like for example, if we compare Arjuna versus Duryodhan, in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Duryodhan was making an estimate of the warriors assembled in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, both on the Pandava side and on the Kaurava side. So when he was actually listing the warriors who were on the Pandava side, he mentioned so many names, but he doesn't mention the name of Krishna. because he felt that, oh, Krishna is not going to fight the battle. Because Krishna took a vow that I will not take up a weapon. So he felt that he did not consider Krishna as a significant person to be worth named in the Pandavas army. So he did not give any value to Krishna. He mentioned all other names. Although Krishna was present on the Pandavas side physically, going to give guidance to the Pandavas and going to guide Arjuna. But on the other hand, when we see these verses in the first canto, 15th chapter, where Arjuna is actually recollecting Krishna, recollecting the Krishna's qualities and pastimes. So many of these pastimes, when he is recollecting, Krishna was not personally present, but still he says that because of Krishna's grace, we were able to overcome these difficulties. Like that he gives a list of pastimes. Although Krishna did not personally fight in the battle, he says that because of Krishna's grace, we were able to cross this ocean of the Kaurava army, which were filled with so much of Timingala fishes like Bhishma, Drona, and many other incidents, even apparently Krishna did not personally, like Bhima was fed poison, but he feels that because of Krishna's grace, we were saved. So this is a difference between a devotee and a materialist. So materialist feels that he does not feel the need of God in his life. Even when Krishna is present on the Pandava side, he did not actually give any value to Krishna. But in the case of Arjuna, he is recollecting so many incidents, how by Krishna's grace they were able to overcome. One particular incident, he say, Arjuna mentions that because of Krishna's grace, I was able to astonish Lord Shiva when fighting with him. So actually Krishna was not personally present when Arjuna was fighting with Lord Shiva. But he mentions that because of Krishna's grace, I was able to even astonish Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva became pleased with me, and then he awarded this Pashupatastra. That purport Prabhupada explains that he compares the devotees of Krishna versus devotees of Lord Shiva. So there he mentions that Ravana was a devotee of Lord Shiva, but then he could not be, when he had kidnapped Mother Sita, he could not be protected by Lord Shiva. He was killed by Lord Ram. But on the other hand, Arjun, he was a devotee of Krishna. He was fighting with Lord Shiva. But even in fighting with Lord Shiva, he was able to please Lord Shiva. So in that, he makes a comparison between a devotee of Krishna versus a devotee of Lord Shiva. And we see there is another very beautiful incident which comes in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. So four chapters describe the story of Markandeya Rishi. But I want to focus on one particular aspect of the story in which we can see the character of Lord Shiva. So Markandeya Rishi, he performed intense austerities. When the Lord appeared in front of him, he expressed his desire that I want to see your illusory potency. I want to see your illusory potency. So it is said that curiosity kills the cat. So sometimes when a person is curious to know certain things, and then sometimes, although it may be just a small desire, you want to be curious to know something, but that curiosity can lead to certain sinful desires. So sometimes people, out of curiosity, like there are certain sites in the internet which actually blaspheme certain Vaishnavas. Out of curiosity, sometimes a person sees that, but then they become contaminated with those actually negative vibrations. So Markandeya Rishi wanted to see the illusory potency of the Lord. Of course, Isopanishad explains that vidyamcha avidyamcha yas tadvedo ubayam saha avidyaya mrityam tirtva vidyaya mritam ashnute. Isopanishad says that one should know vidya and avidya. One who knows vidya and avidya simultaneously, he can enjoy the full blessings of immortality.
But of course, like when it talks about like one should know avidya, that means like one should know how the maya works. It is not that one has to experience maya. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj clarifies in his book that one should know how the maya works, not that one has to experience maya in order to know how maya is powerful. But here in the case of Markandeya Rishi, he wanted to see the illusory potency. So this curiosity led to so many events that like he had to see the time of annihilation, and he saw the power of maya, in which how the maya, the time of annihilation, it actually destroys the planets and universes. He saw how the rains at the time of annihilation. He was wandering all alone during the waters of annihilation. And then finally, after seeing the power of maya, he saw the beautiful form of the Lord called as Vatapatrashayi. He saw a small child lying on the banyan leaf. So he was like, when he saw that, when he went through that experience of the time of annihilation, intense rain, intense heat, and then wandering all alone, he was like hungry and thirsty, like for so many years together, was like completely miserable. After going through that experience, when he saw that beautiful child, the form of Vatapatrashayi, he was like completely captivated. And then within a moment, when Vatapatrashayi, the small child inhaled, then Markandeya Rishi went inside the body of Vatapatrashayi, and then he came out. And then the Lord disappeared. So in this way, Markandeya Rishi saw the power of the illusory energy, and then he saw the power of the Lord, how the Supreme Lord, the small child Vatapatrashayi, he's transcendental to the creation. Like he was completely tormented by the power of the power of destruction, the annihilating the time of annihilation. He was completely like bewildered in that time. And then when he saw the small child lying so peacefully, so that shows that how the Lord is completely transcendental to the creation. So he witnessed the transcendental nature of the Lord, and he also saw the power of the illusory potency of the Lord. And then after seeing that, now Markandeya Rishi's devotion became so intense. As Krishna says in the Gita, Daivi Kesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratya Mameveye Prapadyante Maya Metam Tarantiti. One should know how powerful Krishna is, and one should know how powerful Maya is. This divine energy of mind, which is very difficult to overcome, can be overcome if a person surrenders to me. So when a person knows how powerful Krishna is, and when a person has full realization how the powerful Maya is, then a person can take intense shelter of Krishna. So Markandeya Rishi, he had witnessed the power of the illusory potency, and he actually also saw the power of Krishna, how he is transcendental to the creation. And then now his devotion became so intense, and then he was actually meditating on the Supreme Lord. So when he was meditating on the Supreme Lord, so at that time, Lord Shiva was going along with Parvati. So when he was going along with Parvati, Parvati was saying that this learned Brahmana, see this learned Brahmana, his body, mind and senses are completely undisturbed. And he is as calm as the waters of the ocean when the wind has ceased and the fish and water remain still. Therefore, my dear Lord, you please bestow benedictions to this particular Brahmana, and he has performed so much of austerities, please offer some benedictions. So that time Lord Shiva speaks two verses which I want to focus to highlight the character of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva says, Naivetyat ashishakvapi brahmarishir moksham apyuta bhaktim param bhagavati labdavan purushevyaye. So he says, this saintly Brahmana
does not desire any benediction. He does not desire any benediction in the form of material happiness or going to heavenly planets. In fact, he does not desire even liberation. Not even liberation. Because he has attained pure devotional service unto the inexhaustible Lord. So here we see that Lord Shiva is glorifying Markandeya Rishi, because Parvati Devi is putting a proposal that you must offer, go and offer some benediction to him. But he is saying that actually I have no service, because he does not desire any benediction, he does not desire even liberation. Because he has attained the highest goal of pure devotional service to the Lord. And then Lord Shiva says, Atapi samavadishyamo bhavan yetena saduna ayam hi paramo labho ninam sadhu samagamaha. He says, nevertheless, O Bhavani, although he does not desire any benediction, but let us at least go and talk with this saintly person. He does not need me. He does not need any benedictions from me, but he is a great saintly person. At least we can go and associate with this saintly person. So here we see that, so every person, like we all have different identities in this world. So there are certain identities related with the material world. We have so many identities related with the material world. But our eternal identity is actually we are servant of Krishna. So here, in the case of Lord Shiva, if you see, his identity in relation to the material world is like a demigod, who actually offers, who reciprocates with the different people, who offers benedictions. So as a demigod, he does not have anything to give to Markandeya Rishi. So usually many times we become absorbed in the temporary identity and we forget the permanent identity. I remember like one class, like Dwarkadeshwar was mentioning, like Solnath Radhana Swami Maharaj mentioned to him that you are a devotee first and then you are a doctor. In that sense, like there are many identities in regards to so many. In that way, Lord Shiva, like if he had been absorbed in his identity as a demigod, he could have felt, okay, anyway, he is not desiring any benediction, so let me just go on in my own way. But he thought that, even though I can't give any benediction, but at least I can associate with a saintly person. So that shows that he was actually absorbed in his identity as a person, as a eternal servant of the Lord, I can associate with another Vaishnava. So therefore, he actually goes to meet Markandeya Rishi, and then there is a beautiful exchange between Markandeya Rishi and Lord Shiva. So this is a very beautiful character of Lord Shiva, in which we see that Lord Shiva is not thinking that, oh, just like for example, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, in this verse, beautiful verse, Tadvag Visargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Pratishlokam Abadda Vatyapi. The next line. Naman Yanantasya Eshong Kitanya Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhava. So Narada Muni is telling to Vyasadev about the glories of those literatures which contain the glorification of Supreme Lord. Especially in this verse, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhava. So Vishnu Chakravarti explains that Sadhava, the purified people, sadhus, they hear, chant and remember the glories of the Supreme Lord. So he says that the sadhus, when there is an opportunity for speaking Krishna Katha, they speak Krishna Katha. So when there is no opportunity for speaking, when there is an opportunity for hearing, so they hear Krishna Katha. And when there is neither an opportunity for speaking nor an opportunity for hearing, they spontaneously sing the glories of the Lord. Shrinvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti Sadhava. So in that sense, we see that a genuine sadhu is not simply attached to the act of speaking Krishna Katha, but is actually attached to the person Krishna. So if there is no opportunity for speaking, well, at least he can hear about Krishna. If neither of these opportunities are there, at least I can sing about Krishna. Like Prabhupada would sometimes in his room suddenly start singing some bhajans. Neither opportunity for hearing nor opportunity for speaking. So he would speak about that. So here, Lord Shiva, he didn't think that, okay, I don't have any opportunity to give something to him. So therefore, I can't, let me just go on my own way. He did not think like that. But at least I can actually associate with this Markandeya Rishi. So in that way, we can see the true nature of a sadhu exhibited by Lord Shiva in this particular episode. And then, we can see another beautiful verse in the 11th canto, 2nd chapter. One of the Navayogendras, when they describe the devotees, Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, Uttam Adhikari. So when they describe the Uttam Adhikari, they mentioned that Sarva Bhuteshu Yaha Pashyet Bhavam Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha Bhutani Bhagavat Yatman Yesha Bhagavatottama. Says that the advanced devotee is one who sees everything the soul of all souls. Advanced devotees see Krishna in everyone and they see everyone as being situated in Krishna. Whatever they see, the presence of Krishna in every living entity. In fact, the acharyas explained that the advanced devotees, they think that I am the only non-devotee, everyone else is a devotee. So, Kanishtha Adhikaris, they think that I am the only devotee, others are non-devotees. But Uttam Adhikari, Mahabhagavati thinks that I am the only non-devotee, everyone else is a devotee. But the acharyas highlight one very beautiful point. Jiva Goswami says that, although a Mahabhagavat sees every living entity as a pure spirit soul, such a Mahabhagavat still experiences special ecstasies and other symptoms upon meeting another Vaishnava. And this is not contradictory to his vision as a topmost devotee. Rather, it is a symptom of his love for Krishna. So a pure devotee sees every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna, and therefore he expresses his love for Krishna through love for all the expansions and creations of Krishna. But still, such a Mahabhagavat, when he sees a devotee of Krishna, he feels a special ecstasy. Although he sees every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna, but still when he meets a devotee, he feels a special ecstasy. He exhibits special happiness. And as an example, he gives the example of Lord Shiva meeting the Prachetas. So because Lord Shiva is a Mahabhagavat, he is such a Mahabhagavat, he sees every living entity as a pure spirit soul. But still that Lord Shiva, when he saw the Prachetas going to worship Lord Vishnu, he exhibits a special happiness on meeting a devotees of Krishna who are just practitioners who are going to perform devotional service. Like in the previous episode, Markandeya Rishi is a perfected pure devotee. How Lord Shiva was eager to associate with the pure devotees of Krishna. But in this episode, we can see that Lord Shiva was eager to associate even with the practitioner devotees who are just having a sincere desire to worship Krishna. So there Lord Shiva speaks a very beautiful verse. Kshanardena pi tulaye nasvargam na punarbhavam bhagavat sangi sangasya Martyanam kimmutasishah. So he says that even a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord, it cannot be compared with kshanardenapi tulaye na swargam. It cannot be compared with a swarga,
Napunar Bhavam. It cannot be compared with attaining liberation. Then what to speak of other things? Martyanam kim utasishah. In this way, Lord Shiva is exhibiting his great appreciation for the association of the Prachetas. And then he says, Ata Bhagavata Yuyam Priyasta Bhagavanyata Namad Bhagavata Namcha Preyan Anyosti Karhichit. He says that you are all devotees of the Lord, and as such, I appreciate that you are as respectable as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know that in this way, the devotees also respect me and that I am dear to them. And thus, no one can be as dear to the devotees as I am. So, Lord Shiva is expressing his great appreciation for getting the association of the Prachetas. In this, we see that although Lord Shiva is a Mahabhagavat, he exhibits his Although he sees every living entity as a pure spirit soul, but he exhibits a special happiness on meeting a devotee of the Lord. So we saw two examples, Lord Shiva's appreciation of the association of Markandeya Rishi and the Prachetas. And going to the episode of Daksha Prajapati, I will just highlight few points related to Daksha Prajapati's episode. there is one purport in the 10th canto. Through that purport, I just want to see the Daksha's episode. But before that, like the 9th offense to the holy name is that to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless. That is the 9th offense to the holy name. So there are certain statements like which also imply other statements which sometimes we may fail to see those statements. For example, when you see this statement, to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless, it indirectly implies not to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithful. That is also in one sense an offense. Like Shridhar Shivaram Maharaj mentions in his book, that to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless, that is one of the offense. But it implies another thing is that not to speak the glories of the holy name to the faithful. So, in one sense, if we see the Vyasadeva's pastime in the first canto, Vyasadeva, in one sense, in order to connect with the different kinds of people, the materialistic people, who are not ready for direct Krishna consciousness, he wrote so many literatures. He wrote the Puranas, divided the Vedas, wrote the Karmakanda section. He wrote the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra. So in order to gradually elevate a person's faith. But the point is that, from one point of view, his attitude, his intention was right. But the point is that he did not exclusively glorify Krishna. So maybe he followed the principle of one should not speak the glories of the holy name to the faithless, but he did not follow the principle of not to speak the glories of the holy name, glories of the Supreme Lord, to the faithful. He had not written one literature which will exclusively glorify the Supreme Lord, and therefore Narada Muni chastised him, and he told him to write Srimad Bhagavatam. So similarly. So, in the 10th canto, Hridayananda Maharaj writes a statement. He says that control is felt as control when there is a resistance to control. Like, for example, he says that in describing Lord Krishna, the Supreme Controller, and God, describing Lord Krishna, the Supreme Controller and God is almost a type of political analysis referring as it does to a hierarchy of power and control. So when you say Lord Krishna, the Supreme Controller, he says that such analysis of levels of power and hierarchies of rule is significant in a context in which one entity is not fully surrendered in love to a higher entity. In other words, control becomes visible or control is consciously felt as control when there is a resistance to that control. So usually, sometimes subordinates have complained with the superior that maybe the superior is trying to control. But that control is felt as control because there is a resistance to control. But if we take this statement, it also implies another statement that sometimes the superiors, they have complained with the subordinates that the subordinate is unsubmissive or independent or rebellious. But if we see from one point of view that unsubmissiveness or rebelliousness or independent nature, it is felt as such because this is a tendency to control. When there is a tendency to control, we actually perceive that rebelliousness or independent as the rebelliousness or independent nature. So, yes, with this background, if we see the Daksha episode, so in practicality, the point we are trying to highlight is that, so sometimes the subordinates have complained to the superiors, or the superiors have complained toward the subordinates. The first point is like, first one has to accept one's own actually shortcoming. Oh, I have a nature of being independent or rebellious, or I have a nature of wanting to control. And then after accepting our shortcoming, then we have to deal with the situation. So in the real life situation, both have the subordinate will have a certain degree of rebelliousness and the superior may have a certain degree of wanting to control. So one has to first accept one's shortcoming and then deal with the situation. So in the Daksha episode, so Daksha felt very much offended when Lord Shiva did not actually get up to offer respects to him. And he started accusing Lord Shiva in so many ways. So here Daksha, he is actually a father-in-law and Lord Shiva is a son-in-law. So Lord Shiva did not have any envy or resentment towards Daksha Prajapati. He was actually absorbed in remembrance of the Supreme Lord. And he did not get up. He did not consciously want to disrespect Daksha Prajapati. But Daksha Prajapati, because he had a great amount of false ego and arrogance, he had a great expectation for respect. So therefore, he actually felt greatly offended. He started accusing Lord Shiva. So here we see that, so he felt Lord Shiva is unsubmissive or maybe rebellious or independent, that he did not actually show respect to me. He felt as such, but actually not because Lord Shiva was like that, because of his expectation for respect. Just like suppose somebody is wearing a red colored glasses. He sees everything as red. So one may start thinking that, oh, why everything is red? But actually the fact is that we are wearing the red colored glasses. So Daksha Prajapati could not see the red colored glass which he was wearing, that wanting, the expectation of wanting respect. So in fact, something may be actually red also. Certain thing may be actually red. But the point is, like, first we have to realize that we are wearing the red colored glasses. So in that sense, Daksha Prajapati, he could not see that. And So when we compare in the same episode, Daksha Prajapati and Lord Brahma, how they actually dealt with Lord Shiva. So in the case of Daksha Prajapati, he was seeing Lord Shiva only as a, say, father-in-law to the son-in-law. The son-in-law is not respecting me. He was seeing Lord Shiva from a material point of view. He did not see the exalted position of Lord Shiva as a Vaishnava. But whereas we see that when Lord Brahma goes to meet Lord Shiva, again in the 4th canto, 6th chapter, then all the demigods, they offer obeisances to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was respected by all the demigods. And then when Lord Shiva sees Lord Brahma, he immediately offers obeisances to Lord Brahma. So Prabhupada writes that just like Vamanadev offered obeisances to Kashyapa Muni, Lord Shiva offered respects to Lord Brahma. It means like Vamanadev is the supreme personality of Godhead, but still he showed the etiquette of offering obeisances to the Father. So similarly, although Lord Shiva is a highly elevated, but still he showed the etiquette of offering respects to the Father, Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma glorifies Lord Shiva. In that purport, Prabhupada says that Lord Brahma knew that, he says that although Lord Brahma had received very respectful obeisances from Lord Shiva, he knew that Lord Shiva was in a more exalted position than himself. So Lord Brahma, he is the father of Lord Shiva, but he did not see Lord Shiva simply as his son, but he saw Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava. Although he received the respect from Lord Shiva, out of the normal etiquette, the son, father has to receive the respect from the son, but he saw Lord Shiva not in the material point of view, but from a spiritual point of view, that he is much more exalted than me because he is the greatest Vaishnava. But whereas in the case of Daksha Prajapati, he saw Lord Shiva only from a material point of view. He only saw Lord Shiva, oh, he is just a son-in-law, he is not offering obeisances to me, I am just a father-in-law. So he felt offended. So therefore, in dealing with the Vaishnavas, the Vaishnava point of view, that should always be given the highest priority than the material point of view. So we can see this in respects to Brahma's dealing with Lord Shiva and Daksha Prajapati's dealing with Lord Shiva. And Madhvacharya, he mentions the point that why did Lord Shiva not offer obeisances to Daksha Prajapati? Lord Shiva, like when he saw the superior Lord Brahma, he immediately offered obeisances to the Lord Brahma as a father. Why did actually Lord Shiva not offer obeisances to Daksha Prajapati with his father-in-law? So Madhvacharya, he mentions in the 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita purport, he says that in order for the Supreme Lord to appear in our hearts should be filled with good qualities, virtuous qualities, then the Lord will appear. Like if you want to attract a child, you have to show some sweets and toys. So similarly, if you have to attract the Lord to appear in our heart, we have to exhibit good qualities. So Lord Shiva is telling to Parvati Devi, why I did not offer obeisances to Daksha is that when we stand up and offer obeisances to somebody, we offer respects to the super soul within that person. And this should be understood by the person who is receiving the respect and the person who gives the respect. But in the case of Daksha Prajapati, his heart was so much filled with pride and arrogance and envy. Because of that, I could not see the presence of the Lord in his heart. So therefore, I did not offer obeisances. So in that sense, we can see that's the reason why Lord Shiva did not offer obeisances to Daksha Prajapati. And just few more points, we'll end. So there's another beautiful point in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, when there's a description of Ilavrita Varsha. So in the Ilavrita Varsha, Lord Shiva is the only male, and he was served by 1 billion or 10 billion maid servants. He was served by Parvati Devi and was assisted by 10 billion maid servants. So, and Lord Shiva, there's a beautiful prayer. Lord Shiva is offering beautiful prayers to Lord Sankarshan. So here we see another beautiful point that how he is the only male and he is surrounded by 10 billion maid servants. But in his heart, he was absorbed in meditation on Lord Sankarshan. So, when a person is like not surrounded by the objects of sense gratification, to not think of the objects of sense gratification, it's not so difficult. Out of sight, out of mind.
But when a person is surrounded by the objects of sense gratification, but still to be absorbed in the Supreme Lord, that requires a really great level of Krishna consciousness, which Rupa Goswami talks about in the 9 symptoms of Bhava Bhakti as Virakti. He says, like, Vairagya means when a person says no to sense gratification, but there is a temptation from within, but he forcibly says no. But Virakti means when a person is surrounded by the objects of sense gratification, but still he is completely indifferent to it. He does not even feel the presence of them, because his consciousness is completely absorbed in the Supreme Lord. So here we see that Lord Shiva's exalted Krishna consciousness exhibited in his prayers to Lord Sankarshan, his absorption in Lord Sankarshan despite being surrounded by so many maidservants. And another beautiful point in relation to the, we can see the character of Lord Shiva coming in the Mohini Murti pastime. So, I just want to focus on one aspect of Mohini Murti pastime. Like, usually, when a person commits some mistake, when a person, say, falls down in breaking some principles, when a person is completely shameless, when a person, he feels no guilt about it. He does not feel any guilt that he committed a mistake. That is one extreme. Another extreme is that a person becomes so overwhelmed with that guilt, and depression, one becomes like a devotee of depression. Like, he fails to, he is not even able to think of Krishna, he becomes really overwhelmed with that depression and this thing. But in the case of Lord Shiva, after that whole episode of Mohini Murti, when he actually realized how he was bewildered by the Mohini Murti, he became astonished by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. He became astonished by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. In fact, the verse says that Lord Shiva, understanding the greatness of the Lord of inestimable power, did not consider it astonishing, since the Lord resides everywhere in the universe. And seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu was very pleased, and he spoke as follows. So we see that sometimes, like in this episode, we see Lord Shiva, in one sense, he was exposed in front of his followers. But he was so much absorbed in the Supreme Lord that that guilt did, he became so much conscious of the extraordinary power of the Supreme Lord that that guilt did not, he did not become overcome by that guilt. like, to glorify Vishnu as the Supreme Lord, in fact, from another point of view, in this pastime, Lord Shiva was willing to be defamed in order to establish the position of Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Lord. Like, sometimes one renders certain services, but in that services one may get certain good credits, good praise from others. But here in this service, Lord Shiva may be defamed, he may be criticized, but he was willing to go through that in order to establish the position of the Supreme Lord as the greatest, as the Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. So in this way, we can see the exalted character of Lord Shiva, that, and we can also see that Lord Shiva, that he became, his absorption the Supreme Lord, that he did not become so much embarrassed, that he actually started glorifying the Supreme Lord. He said that how powerful is the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. And that attitude of Lord Shiva, with that attitude, Lord Vishnu became very much pleased. And then he actually appreciated Lord Shiva. So therefore, a devotee is not that he does not commit mistakes, but the greatness of a devotee is that how he bounces back after he commits the mistakes. Yeah, Lord Shiva, yeah, he might have committed the mistake, but how he bounced back. So if a person is more conscious of his identity as the leader or as the guru of these followers, then when he commits a mistake in front of the followers, Like, it would be a great embarrassing for him. He would not actually, it would be very difficult for him to focus on the Supreme Lord. But here in the case of Lord Shiva, he was, in one sense, he committed a mistake in front of his followers, but his identity as a servant of the Supreme Lord, that was more predominant in his consciousness than the identity as the leader of his followers. So therefore, he became more astonished by the greatness of the Supreme Lord, and with that attitude, Lord Vishnu was actually so pleased. So we can see this quality of Lord Shiva coming in the Mohini Murti pastime. So all these qualities show that how Lord Shiva is so much absorbed in his, although he is performing the role of a demigod in relation to this world, but his absorption as a Vaishnava, as a servant of the Supreme Lord, we see this in so many pastimes in this episode of Markandeya Rishi, how he is eager to associate with Markandeya Rishi, how he is eager to associate with the Prachetas, how he is actually absorbed in the glorification of Sankarshan in the Ilavrata Varsha, despite being surrounded by 10 billion maid servants. And in the episode of Mohini Murti, although he committed a mistake in front of the followers, but he was more absorbed in his identity as a servant of the Supreme Lord. So these incidents definitely prove that Lord Shiva is the Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He is the greatest of all the Vaishnavas. Of course, there are many other stories are there, but I would like to end here. Grantharan Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.